Are you struggling to pay your property taxes? A group of volunteers are fanning out across Ohio to get your signature. I'm Nick Swartzel, filling in for Lucy May. Today on Cincinnati Edition, Axe Ohio Tax are looking to get an amendment on the November ballot to eliminate property taxes altogether. So what would that mean for the public services we rely on, and what would it mean for our bottom line as homeowners and taxpayers? Joining us to talk about it are retired state lawmaker Bill Seitz. He was co-chair of Governor DeWine's Property Tax Reform Working Group. Mr. Seitz, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be with you, Nick.
We also have Brian Massey. He's a member of the Committee to Abolish Property Taxes. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Nick.
And we have Keith Davey, a member of Ohio Citizens for Property Tax Reform. Thanks for coming back on the show, Keith.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you all for being here. First, let's level set a little bit here. How big is Ohio's property tax problem? We know locally property tax values jumped between 30% and 40% in 2024, for example, depending on the county. That led to higher property taxes for many people, an average of 10% higher in Hamilton County, but much higher in many individual cases. Those increases feel hardest on lower income folks generally. What has this increase looked like at the state level over the last few years? Brian, since you were the first to in the door metaphorically, let's start with you. Give us the big picture.
Big picture. that's a tough question. What we have come to realize that the public sector has outgrown the private sector's ability to pay for services. There's no problem with generating revenue in the state. The problem that we have is a spending problem in the state. The state general operating revenue for the last two decades, it's grown over 70%. And we're just saying that we've had enough of paying of property taxes. And we keep asking people, is private property ownership, is it important to you? And we think it is.
Bill, you've done a lot of work on this issue. Talk to me. How can people wrap their minds around how big of an issue this is?
Well, first of all, let me crack Brian on one thing. Not one dime of property tax goes to the state of Ohio. All $22 billion annually collected by property taxes exclusively benefits local government, townships, cities, counties, library districts, park districts, senior citizen services, children's services. So number one, state spending is, quite frankly, utterly irrelevant to this discussion. Second of all,
I can see we're gonna have a real problem with this, this whole format here. I didn't say that the property taxes were collected by the state.
Let's stick on the main topic here. We are sort of veering off. I like a spirited debate, but let's stay with the kind of question at hand here. We're talking about the scope of all this, so right. let's get a good idea of what kind of problem we're facing here.
Yeah. So here's the deal: the vast majority of property taxes are subject to a 1976 law called House Bill 920. That law guarantees that as property values increase, the levy millage is rolled back so that it produces no more money in the current year than it produced in the year of introduction. But there are two exceptions to that. The first one is 10 mills is constitutionally allotted to each county, and those mills do rise in lockstep with property valuation increases. Similarly, school districts that collect 20 or fewer mills for school purposes are permitted to have all of those mills under 20 increase in lockstep with property value increases. The current problem is created really by massive increases in property value, which, by the way, is not altogether a bad thing. I'd rather go up than down. But secondly, there were over 400 school districts that were currently part of that group that was allowed to raise all millage below 20 mills in lockstep with property increases. That is what produced the current outcry. It's very understandable, and I'm pleased to say that the legislature has taken great steps forward to solve that problem. Going forward, it will not happen again.
Yeah, I also see that Bill is not mentioning about the joint vocational schools, that it's an outside millage, which is supposed to be, you know, voted on by the people. But what he fails to say is that the joint vocational schools are not subject to House Bill 920, and it's treated like inside millage. So what the legislators have done is they have deceived the people by saying that outside millage is all voted on by the people, but they've written the law that a lot of it is treated like inside millage and not subject to the vote of the people.
Okay, let's step back a minute before we get really into the fray. And I'm going to go to Keith. I'm going to bring Keith into the conversation for just a second. And I want to hear about how this effort to abolish property taxes in Ohio started and, you know, kind of what's at stake. So talk to me about where did this begin?
Yeah, so I actually got involved in property tax reform probably 6 to 7 years ago. When my property taxes personally went up in my house in Lakewood. And I met with our local state rep and spent about an hour and a half trying to figure out all this stuff and millage and all this other stuff. And after my head was spinning and I really, I thought, okay. And so I ended up running for state rep up here in District 13 in 2022. And one of the most popular things when I was knocking on doors, as soon as I knocked on a door, probably 75% of the people, especially the senior citizens, said, well, if you go to Columbus, what are you going to do about my property tax? And of course, I did not get elected in 2022. But afterward, a lot of people still kept calling me. So I thought, well, this is an issue. And I kind of hooked up with Brian at that point out of Lake County. We're in Cuyahoga County. And we started groups called Save Our Seniors, which originally was a group to talk to the state legislature about giving breaks to seniors 65 and over, and who were really the most affected at that point. Now, this goes back 4 or 5 years. And so, you know, we started the groups that kind of took off. We did our best working with Brian's group. My group both started talking to state legislatures all over the state. Brian made many trips to Columbus, and essentially we were told that there's nothing we can do for seniors. You know, we can't carve out people that are 65 and over for tax breaks or eliminate taxes. And, you know, so we started beating our head against the wall with the legislature. And this is on both sides of the aisle. And essentially, you know, we said, OK, well, if you can't give break to seniors that really were the most affected, I mean, Brian and I have been getting calls for years from elderly people, I mean, crying that they cannot afford their property tax, they're going to have to sell their homes. And we have a legislator up here that, you know, told people in some of our meetings, 84-year-old woman, well, honey, you know, if you can't afford the taxes, why don't you sell your house and move in an apartment? And that's kind of the way a lot of state legislatures have approached this, unfortunately. So anyway, we then, you know, we went through a litany of items that, well, could you help us with, you know, maybe expanding the homestead exemption? And could you help us with the way the homes are evaluated? And basically, it was all no. And so that's why Brian and I and the committee, almost probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, I guess, Brian, sat down and said, you know, we're not getting anywhere with our elected officials, so we have to do this ourselves, and we have to do a constitutional amendment. And in all the research we did, and Brian can tell you more, you know, we were told by the state, hey, you can't single out these people, you can't cut out exemptions, it's got to be all or nothing, and that's where we went with it. And so, you know, all of the five bills that the state has passed and DeWine has signed, you know, it all sounds great, but I think, you know, in 2026, even with this $2 billion rollback or whatever, the average person is going to save $126. Now, when you're like us in Lakewood paying almost $8,000 a year, doesn't do a lot of good. So again, all the bills that have been put forth and signed by the governor, one, are not, in our opinion, significant. And two, it really does nothing for those people that I talk to every day that are losing their homes. And that's kind of where we're at. And that's You know, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Brian, or not. But
yes, yeah, that's exactly right. But what Keith was saying, but when we try to approach the legislators and trying to, you know, save our seniors, they definitely said we're not going to carve out anything for seniors. And we later found out that that carve out was going to cost $3 billion a year, which was, you know, basically, if you're looking at the total funds budget, that's about a, you know, 3%. If you're looking at the general fund, I think it was about a 6% increase. And so it was at that point where you basically said they're not going to do anything for the average citizens at all. And we then said, we've got to starve the beast. We've got to take it all because they're not listening to us.
We're talking about an effort to eliminate Ohio property taxes. Do you have a question or a comment? Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Bill, I want to get back to you. We've been talking about some of the sort of legislative efforts to address this problem. And I want to ask you about a couple that the group you worked on, the working group, recommended that got adopted by the legislature. What do those do?
Okay. As to both inside millage and school districts collecting fewer than 20 mills for school purposes, they used to, the taxes went up in lockstep with property value increases. But now, in both cases, they will not be allowed to increase by more than the general rate of inflation as measured by the CPI. So, for example, if you have a property valuation increase of 20%, but inflation is 2.4%, which it currently is, the taxes could only go up by 2.4%. That solves the immediate problem. Now, the gentlemen are right that there certainly is plenty of room for the legislature to act with respect to relief for needy seniors. Seniors, Wexner and others who are billionaires do not need property tax relief, but many elderly people on a fixed income do. And that is why our task force recommended that we expand the homestead exemption, which is currently on the books for people that are below a certain income and above a certain age. We recommended that we look at a circuit breaker, which 30-some states already have, by which if you're property tax exceeds a specified percentage of your income, you only have to pay that percentage of your income. And then we also recommended that you consider, as legislature, consider a tax deferral plan where eligible needy seniors could defer payment of property tax increases until such time as they died or moved out of the house, at which time the state would recoup the monies that was advanced on their behalf. Any of those would have been good ideas. None of those were done by the legislature. But even if they had been, the gentleman just said it would be $3 billion to give all the seniors complete property tax relief. And yet their constitutional amendment talks about getting rid of $22 billion. There's a big difference between $3 billion and $22 billion. So what they're trying to do is throw the baby out with the bathwater, and they're overshooting the mark in a way that will grievously and adversely affect every unit of local government, all your senior citizen services, all your children's services, all your MR, developmental disability services, libraries, all of that will be bereft of the majority of their income. Because remember, a township is not allowed to have a sales tax or an income tax. Neither are library districts, park districts, developmental disabilities levies, senior levies, etc. The only thing they're granted the ability to do is property tax. And in all of those cases, the property tax accounts for north of 60% of their operating revenue. People talk about cutting spending. I don't think anybody could cut 60% of their spending and still expect to have a functioning, efficient local government.
Yeah, this is a complicated issue. And it's also a really, I think, like, intimate issue. It's like people's homes we're talking about. And I just really appreciate everybody here having this really, you know, thought out and very like technical discussion. So I appreciate that. I want to just briefly go back to, we'll start with Brian. What do you make of these changes that have already been done or that have been suggested?
My statement was it's just too little too late. It's just people are talking to us. As Keith said, we're getting calls basically daily, you know, from seniors who are saying, I just can't afford it. Any tax that's causing a citizen to become homeless is immoral. It's basically immoral that you can tax somebody out of their home. Private property is the foundation of our freedom and liberty. It really is. So now when we talk about, you know, the state, the legislators swear an oath to follow the Ohio Constitution. Article 1 of the Ohio Constitution says all men are by nature free and independent and have certain inalienable rights, among which are those of enjoying, defending life, liberty, acquiring and possessing and protecting property, and seeking and obtaining happiness and safety. I would contend that our legislators are violating their oath by not following that Article 1.
Well, and then they wait a minute.
Hold on a second. We're talking over each other. And this is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzel, filling in for Lucy May. We're talking about a grassroots effort to eliminate property taxes. Volunteers are gathering signatures to get the measure on the Ohio ballot this fall. I'm joined by Brian Massey and Keith Davey, who are heading those efforts, and retired state lawmaker Bill Seitz, co-chair of the Property Tax Reform Working Group. You can join the discussion by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at WVXU.org. Before we get into the questions, we had an email from Roger. All property owners should pay their fair share, just not using property valuations. All property owners should pay 5% of their income. Many seniors and people on fixed incomes like me pay about 14% of our property of our income for property taxes. If 5% of the income for the state is not enough, then a small increase in sales taxes can be made. Help us seniors on fixed income now before we lose our homes. So I want to get back into the impact that eliminating property tax would have in the state. Bill, the Ohio Office of Management and Budget issued an estimate that eliminating property taxes could remove $22 to $24 billion in state revenue. How does that revenue go? What does that revenue go toward, and what kind of impact would the loss have?
Okay, every bit of that revenue goes to support local services. Your local police, your local fire, your local EMT, your local schools, your local libraries, your local zoos, your local senior citizen services, your local children's services, your local MR and developmental disability services. That's where the money goes. Totally eliminating $22 to $24 billion would gut over 60% of most of those just named services from their ability to work. You could not survive with losing 60% of your police or 60% of your firemen or 60% of your teachers. It's just an impossibility. So what the OMB also said is if you were to try to replace that with a sales tax and rely exclusively on a sales tax to fund that deficit, you would need a sales tax on the order of 18 to 20%. And if you did that, everybody in Hamilton County here would be driving over the river to Kentucky to buy everything because they're not going to pay an extra 18 to 20% on everything they buy. Secondly, if you tried to replace that with an increase in the state income tax, which currently stands at 2.75% flat tax, you would need a statewide flat tax, income tax, of 10.2%, which is California-style income taxation. So neither one of those options work. Cutting spending, always a desirable goal. It could be done, but again, not to the tune of 60% of spending. They've overshot the mark. And one other thing that their amendment fails to do is differentiate between business property tax and residential property tax. We all agree that residential property tax is where we need to focus our efforts for reform, but their amendment abolishes every nickel of business property tax in this state. So then if you did that, the entire burden of supporting local government would be imposed on the residents because the businesses would be paying nada.
I wanted to ask you, Keith, about some of this. Do you get the sense that there is an appetite for, you know, tax hikes in some of these other areas, sales or income tax, to kind of make up for this revenue?
Yeah, I do. And so let's talk about, you know, when Bill talks about funding services. So let's talk about what are those services? What are they really? So I have my tax bill out here, the latest one, and they're kind enough to actually break it down by dollar and percentage on where the money goes. So in my county tax, on my county tax bill, 75.28% goes to the public schools. And I would tell you that probably statewide, it on an average, 65 to 75% of your property tax goes to fund public schools. Now, when we talk about losing police, which is what they always try to tell us is doom and gloom, here in my municipal tax, my municipality gets 10% of my county property, 10%. Okay. The county gets 11.9%. Other, which is the library, 2.78%. So, you know, when we talk about services, let's talk about municipalities versus townships. So municipalities, you know, okay, everywhere about 75% goes to schools. So to me, and I'm not even going to get into the whole discussion of the money that our schools waste on administrators or everything else. You know, the fundamental question is here, and we tell everybody when we do our events, our property tax group is not advocating defunding anything. We're just saying, let's fund it in another manner. Now, when you say that,
cool. Okay. Let me interrupt here for a second. So what is that manner that you suggest replacing these funds with?
Well, you know, there are other manners. So for instance, the schools have had for many years the SDIT, which is the school district income tax, which the state has allowed. And by the way, the state legislature could turn the buttons and allow townships to do the same thing that municipalities do. Collect income tax, collect sales tax. The state could do that tomorrow if they want to do that. So, you know, up here, Parma, for instance, has a levy on the ballot May 5th for, I think it's a 1.75% income tax. So this is nothing new. School districts around the state have been using combined income tax, property tax for years. So to me, it's a blend. The fundamental question is, we say, just don't attach it to our property. I'm willing to pay it in other ways. And quite honestly, Bill, you know, when Governor DeWine came out with his 22% sales tax, every time the governor opens his mouth, he does us a favor, because people started digging into that. And I got to tell you, one of the ladies here in Lakewood said, I'll take the 22% sales tax, because that's probably on everything that I spend, a quarter of what I spend in sales in property tax. So I think it's a blend that, you know, the municipalities have to work on, the legislatures have to work on. And hopefully this November, we get some state legislatures that go to Columbus that actually have some common sense and are willing to do the tough things. The culprit is funding the schools. Let's all admit that. We've got to find a different way to make up that 75%. It's not the police that are going to go out of business, the fires, the libraries, they're going to be fine. It's the schools we need, and there's other ways to do it. Willoughby, I think, just passed one, Brian, didn't they, an income tax? The schools are looking at alternative measures, and we just have to be open to do that. And the state legislatures just got to kind of start doing their job and getting this thing redirected in a different manner. But the appetite is to pay. And honestly, you know, I'm on a retired income. I said 30 years ago when my kids were in high school in Avon Lake, I said, let's do income tax. I don't mind paying more when my kids are in school and I'm at the height of my income level. I don't mind. Now that I'm retired and I haven't had kids in school for 30 years, I would not pay as much. So to me, income tax is fine.
Well, Bill, brief response, and then we're going to go to a caller. Real brief.
Sure. It's interesting that these guys are proposing increases in income tax when for the 24 years I was in the General Assembly, we reduced the state income tax every budget because the state income tax was the most recent widespread tax allowed by Ohio law, and everybody hated it. So these guys have come full circle. They're advocating income tax increases.
No, I'm not talking sales. I'm not talking Ohio income tax. I'm talking about local income tax. That's what we're looking at.
Income
local,
tax is state. Income tax.
I want to actually ask a question about the sales tax idea, though. That tax, don't you think that's a bit of a regressive tax? That generally is considered a regressive tax. It falls hardest on lower income people.
No, because you have a choice of what you buy. And you know, you're going to be collecting sales tax from everybody that goes to Kings Island and Cedar Point and all these other venues. No, I don't think it is at all. If I don't want to buy certain items and pay that sales tax, and I don't believe people are going to drive to Pennsylvania for other purchases. No, I think sales tax is the most progressive tax because you choose what you buy.
It's one response I've heard to that particular income or sales tax boost. So I thought I'd bring it up. We do have a caller. Joel has got a question. What's your question, Joel?
My question was, don't you think, I agree with Keith's observation, again, about two-thirds of our property bill here in Hamilton County goes to our Winton Woods School District, which many of us disdain. And don't you think it falls back on we the voters? Because, again, I appreciate Keith reading his property tax bill. There are about 20 different entities that get money from my property taxes. And as Mr. Seitz has pointed out, it really is not the state budget that gets it. But don't you think we local voters need to get more educated about where it really is going?
Thanks, Joe. I'm going to bring Brian back in and let him talk a little bit about this.
Yes, I would agree with the caller. We need to certainly educate the citizens because one of the first things I did when I started to educate people on the property tax was to talk about the housing affordability threshold, which was a way that they could calculate whether or not they could afford a proposed levy on the ballot. And when I started talking about inside outside millage and House Bill 920, 20 mil floor, you know, and continuous levies, you know, their eyes would glaze over because they didn't understand it.
People don't understand it.
We have, briefly, Bill, did you have anything you wanted to respond to about
sure.
the caller?
Sure. Look, the caller is right, but let's remember this. In almost every circumstance, the voters approve these levies. They like children's services. They like their township police. They like their township road services. They like their libraries. So yes, they do need to be educated, and we've already legislated that in the future, every levy will be required to state how much of an increase that levy will result in based on $100,000 of property value. So you can look at the ballot and calculate it yourself right there.
We got another caller. Tim, you're on the line. What do you got to say? Are you there, Tim?
Oh, yes.
Hi.
Yeah, there's a lot here. And one thing you were talking about educating the voters, when they have an increase, don't come out and say, well, this is going to cost you, if you own a home for $100,000, it's going to raise it this amount. Eliminate doing that math. Nobody owns a home that costs $100,000 anymore. The average price of a home in Ohio, I believe, is over $300,000. So let's put that out. Say, okay, you own a home, the $300,000, it's going to cost you this much more. That's one way to educate the voters.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Thank you for your call. So I wanted to get back into some of the other sort of solutions that people have tried. We got a break coming up here in a minute, but just briefly, Mr. Seitz, you highlighted two. Are there other things that could be done to address some of these issues we're talking about?
Well, yes. As I said, we've talked about the need for a circuit breaker, an expanded homestead exemption, a tax deferral program of some kind. We've also proposed in our work group to repeal the so-called LLC loophole, which has allowed rich property owners to evade proper valuation of their homes when they're sold. We also proposed that we have the ability of schools to veto residential tax abatements because the schools get the extra kids and the local city is exempting the new homes from any taxation for 10 years. That's unfair to the schools. So we have indicated, too, that we want to provide new statutes providing relief from penalties and interest on delinquent taxpayers, giving them more chances to enter into payment programs. So there were 20 recommendations in total, and while only a few have yet been adopted, I'm told that others are in the works. So that's good. Yes, schools account for a very significant 60-70% of your tax. That's true. But let's not forget, these folks' amendment would get rid of it altogether. No money for schools, no money for townships, no money for any of this stuff that I think we all agree, regardless of our feelings about public schools, is valuable, and we don't want to get rid of it. They should have drafted a narrower constitutional amendment, in my opinion, but they didn't.
Keith, brief response before we go to break.
Yeah, I think the question probably should be, what is the appetite that the state legislature has to really make significant changes? You know, Bill keeps talking about all these proposed things that are in the works. There's been things in the works, Bill, for 3.5 to 4 years that don't pass. You know, at the end of the last session, House Bill 187 sat there, which would have gave some relief on the Homestead Act, and the state legislatures don't have the appetite to really make any significant changes. And that's the point. We can keep talking about all these things that the state legislature could do, but they just don't do it. And therein lies the problem.
We're talking about an effort to eliminate Ohio's property taxes. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned in to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzel. We're wrapping up our discussion on a signature-gathering effort to axe Ohio's property taxes. We got an email from Steve. He says, efforts to abolish the real estate tax have more in common with a neutron bomb doomsday approach than an effort at correcting a problem. Somewhere there is a middle ground that can be reached in a bipartisan way, reconciling real estate taxation policy with 21st century funding needs. Steve, thanks for your email. So I wanted to circle back around a little bit and talk about the fact that this is a constitutional amendment. And I wanted to ask first, Brian, why is that necessary instead of, advocating for legislation or something like that?
Well, unfortunately, I think Keith may have mentioned it. We tried to reach out to all of our legislators, and we thought we had a representative democracy or a constitutional republic, but they didn't want to talk to us. I mean, honestly, they did not want to talk to us. We reached out to each one of them, and our senator says, as Keith said, if the seniors can't afford the property taxes, sell their home and move into an apartment. So, you know, with that type of attitude with our legislators, I'm saying we, the people, had to react. We had to make a movement because they were not talking to us. And as far as we talk about school funding, it is 60 to 70% of the property tax bill. But why would we continue a failed public school system when you take a look at proficiency scores and declining enrollment and increasing cost per student when you've got 50% of the kids in middle school are not proficient in math and only a third of them are proficient in third grade reading? Why would you continue to pay the kind of money we're paying? Why not start consolidating 611 school districts? In Lake County, we've got 9 school districts. Why not make it a county district and have one superintendent, one curriculum director to start cutting the administrative costs of schools?
Bill, I wanted to ask you, what are the pitfalls from your perspective of a constitutional amendment accomplish this?
A constitutional amendment, once enacted, is very hard to reverse or amend because you have to go through the constitutional amendment process. I do want to comment on something I've heard repeatedly from these gentlemen, that they talk to all the legislators. I was in the General Assembly for 24 years. I was majority leader of the majority party under five different speakers of the House and majority whip under on another one. Not one time did I hear from either of these gentlemen or any of their devotees in Lake County and Cuyahoga County. So I don't know who they're talking about when they say they didn't listen, they didn't do this. Maybe they didn't listen to you up there in Northeast Ohio. Maybe that's what you mean. But the bottom line is, this amendment goes far beyond what is necessary to make reforms to the system that recognize the need for reform for our senior citizens. I completely agree with them on that. And I just think a constitutional amendment is using an anvil to hit a gnat, is what it is.
Yeah, Bill. We sent out emails to every legislator. We rented a room at the state house, invited every legislator to meet with us. The only ones that showed up were the half a dozen legislative aides. Not one of them was over 35 years of age. We tried to talk to them about the American dream, and their American dream is a whole lot different than what our generation is. And what we're saying is, we've lived a good life. We in the baby boomers age, based on the backs of those that fought in World War II, and it is incumbent upon us that future generations have that same American dream. And in Ohio, they don't.
Okay, I'm gonna switch it just a little bit and bring us on to another topic. This email actually kind of is a good segue. Kai emails, please address how 30-year tax abatements for new development affect this issue. If corporations and developers were paying their fair share, would Ohio have this problem? And there's a question I wanted to bring up, that the tax burden in terms of property tax has shifted in the state over the years. In 1975, it was roughly even between residential and agricultural property and business properties, a little bit more toward the business properties. These days, according to data I've seen, it's about 67% of the property taxes are paid by residential and agricultural property owners. Is that one of the cores of this issue? And is there some way to shift that burden back? And I'm going to start with you, Keith. Tell me a little bit about what you think on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, abatements and TIFs obviously are a problem and have been a problem. So, you know, we started digging into TIFs and abatements when we first started getting into this years ago. And I mean, the amount is billions. I mean, it's billions. And, you know, just, you know, try to give an example here in Lakewood. So, you know, we have a piece of municipally owned property that was vacant. And, you know, for years they tried to develop it. So we have a developer finally came in and said, well, I'm going to put up all these apartments and commercial, you know, stores and all, beautiful. And so the city council gives them an abatement. Now, when the abatement takes place, well, who picks up the slack? It's the residential homeowners. And you see this in countless cities all around the state, abatements and TIFs for, you know, supposed bringing in all these new jobs. So yeah, it's a problem. It's a huge problem. Billions of dollars goes to abatements and TIFs, which have already been committed to by local municipalities and the state, that can't be changed now. And so,
Bill,
no.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah. So, you know, so yeah, it is a problem and it's something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, the culprit is that, you know, like here in Lakewood, the council and the school board work hand in hand. They go to the school board and say, hey, we want to give this developer an abatement. You okay with that? Oh, yeah, sure. And then they come back for a 7.5 mil levy again May 5th here. It's like, no.
Bill, hold on a second. I want to get Bill's read on what the emailer said and kind of some of the stats I brought up.
Well, it certainly contributes to the problem. To the extent certain properties do not pay property tax because of abatements or exemptions, then everybody else picks up the slack. The reason why we give out those abatements, supposedly, is to encourage economic development that would otherwise not occur. Whether that has been the case in all the cases of the abatements, I don't know. What I do know is townships have no ability to offer abatements. That is something they cannot do. And what I also know is TIFs, tax increment financing, is not in any way a reduction in taxation. Instead, is a diversion of taxation so that the sponsoring entity gets the majority of the tax revenue as opposed to splitting it with everybody else on the county tax duplicate. So TIFs are not the problem. Abatements could be the problem. And if you listened to me a minute ago, I said one of our recommendations is that we want schools to have a veto over residential abatement programs, such as we have in Cincinnati, where every new home gets a 10-year abatement automatically, whether they want it or not. That means that the kids in those homes are going to our public schools, burdening them, and yet the schools currently have no ability to say, nah, baby, nah, you're adding to our burden and not providing us with any revenue to meet that burden. So there are things that need to be changed. I've heard some people go so far as to say, let's repeal the tax exemption that we give our churches, our hospitals, our nonprofit institutions. Those billions of dollars too. But I think most people would say those exemptions serve a valid purpose and we ought not repeal them. But it would be billions if we did.
All right. We got a caller. Eric, you're on the line. Tell us what you're thinking about.
Hello. My name is Eric. I just called to suggest perhaps eliminating the fraction of real estate tax that goes to the zoo. I think people would go to the zoo anyway, and I think to have a property owners pay for it is inappropriate. I think the attendees should pay, just like we don't subsidize Kings Island or other amusements in the area. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. That's kind of an issue that is pretty specific to where you live, I guess. But, how do these smaller, taxing districts, I guess, play into this? Bill, can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, we have set up separate taxing districts for a reason, and that is they're filling a niche and supplying a community need, be it developmental disability help, children's services help, senior citizens programs, libraries, things like that. And those are autonomous organizations devoted to fulfilling that single purpose. So I think they serve a valid purpose. So I hear people say, well, let's consolidate all of them. Well, that's much easier said than done, because for one thing, you would have to have all of their IT programs speak to one another. Back in the early 2000s, we merged two huge state departments together to form the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. It was a disaster. They had IT computer systems that did not marry up or communicate with one another, and it cost billions to get that fixed. So consolidation is not always the answer. In fact, sometimes it complicates things more.
Brian, I wanted to see if you had any response to the caller's thoughts.
Well, I have several things. There was an article in the Sunday Plain Dealer talking about policymatters.org. They talked about what is the cumulative effect of the reduction of the income tax since 2005. And what they say in the article, there was roughly $17 billion per year has been reduced because of that legislative impact. And the problem with the $17 billion a year is that the top 1% of Ohio earners, their average annual tax cut was $69,000. The middle 20%, those earning between $50,000 and $84,000, they received an average tax cut of $800. And the lowest income individuals earning less than $26,000, they had to pay $32 more. So we've certainly shifted the burden. We've helped the donor class. But we have really decimated the middle income. They've hollowed out the middle income people. And one other thing I should mention, Ohio is number one in something in the country, and that is the funding of public libraries. Until this last budget, the legislators had been spending more on public libraries than they had the local government funds. And those local government funds are used to send the money back to the local communities for police, fire, and roads. So we dare say that the legislators have lost their way and where they're spending the money.
Bill, quick 30-second encapsulation of kind of, or 45 seconds, I'm sure. Not being fair to you, of kind of like, give me the elevator pitch for why we shouldn't abolish property taxes.
Well, any good tax system relies on a three-corner stool, a combination and a balance between property tax, sales tax, and income tax. Each tax functions slightly differently. Property tax is the most stable form of revenue. Sales tax varies based on how well the economy is doing and what people choose to buy, expensive or cheap. And then income tax also is highly variable based on things like the unemployment rate. And so, you know, you need all three working together to ensure that you have enough money to fund the needs of government. We have a very great bond rating here in the state of Ohio and locally. All of that would go out the window if these people's amendment passes, because those property taxes form the security for all of our issued bonds. That would be a disaster. So we can't have this. We need to work collaboratively towards further reforms in property tax, but we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Brian, where does this petition stand in terms of the constitutional amendment? Like, how many signatures do you need, and when do you need them by? And how many have you gathered so far?
That's interesting. I get that question all the time. And since our Senator Serino declared war on we the people up here in Lake County, we the people are declaring war on the legislators. And when you're at war, you never give the enemy any intel. I'm the only person in the state of Ohio that knows how many signatures we have. And quite frankly, I'm not telling anybody anything.
Will you tell us how many you need?
We need 413,488 signatures by July 1st to the Secretary of State's office.
And Keith, I wanted to give you just, we got like 30 seconds. Give us the thoughts on this thing moving forward.
Yeah, so I would just like to promo the effort. As Brian said, we need our signatures in by July 1st. We're on the home stretch. Everybody out there, we have circulators in 88 counties. Please go on our website, citizensforpropertytaxreform.org or axohiotax.org. You'll find where you can go and sign the petition. If we get it on the ballot, it will pass. So please keep the signatures going. We need your help.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Nick Swartzel. Thanks for listening.